There's one thing you can really count on. I will never stop fighting for the people of Alaska.
Ted Stevens returns to Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new calls for increased protection of Denali Park wolves.
Wolves come from near and far areas of the park and go there quite deliberately to hunt. And trappers lie in wait for them there and nail them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
Senator Ted Stevens returned home to Alaska last night. Stevens greeted well-wishers at a Penn Air hangar at his namesake airport in Anchorage. It was his first time facing Alaskans since his conviction on ethics charges. Stevens ascended the stage wearing a bright yellow vest that stood out against the navy blue of the Alaska flag backdrop.
I'm here to tell you that I am innocent of the charges that were brought against me, and I will be vindicated. And there's one thing you can really count on. I will never stop fighting for the people of Alaska.
Stevens was accompanied by his wife, Catherine, daughter, Lily, and Senator Lisa Murkowski. Murkowski made it clear she was standing by Stevens.
The love that is in this room for a man who has led his state and who has led this country for decades is bottled right here. And let me tell you, folks, we're going to show them back in Washington, D.C. what we have here in Alaska.
After a brief mention of his trial outcome, Stevens got right down to the business of campaigning.
I am not asking for your vote because of what we've achieved in the past. I'm running for re-election seeking your support because of what we can do in the future.
Yeah. About 300 to 400 Stevens backers showed up to support the 84-year-old senator. Stevens showed no sign of slowing down. He autographed campaign posters for about an hour after he finished his remarks. He faces Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich at the polls next week and in a televised debate later tonight. Begich also held a political rally last night. Campaign spokeswoman Julie Haskett.
And we had about 300 people there from all across the city. It was very exciting. You never know at these rallies who's going to show up and what kind of numbers you're going to get. But we were very excited to see about 300 people come out 6 days out from the election, be very excited about this race and super energized about Tuesday and the results.
Haskett says Begich is appealing to voters across the board.
Well, interestingly, we're seeing support for Mark Begich all across the political spectrum and across the age groups. And we think that's because people have recognized that he is part of this next generation of leadership for Alaska as we sort of have a generational shift going on in our state and across the country.
The Begich and Stevens debate tonight will be on public television and public radio. U.S. House Democratic challenger Ethan Berkowitz and Republican incumbent Don Young will lead off at 8 p.m., followed by Stevens and Begich. The Alaska Public Radio Network will carry the debates live from 8 to 10 p.m. Senator Stevens can vote in next week's election despite being a convicted felon. The Alaska Department of Law has determined that Stevens is eligible to vote until he is sentenced. APRN's Libby Casey has more.
Senator Stevens became a convicted felon Monday when a Washington, D.C. jury found him guilty of lying on financial disclosure forms about gifts worth more than $250,000. But Alaska's senior Republican senator has not yet been sentenced and won't be for at least a few months. The State Department of Law determined Wednesday evening that sentencing will cost Stevens his right to vote. So he's clear to cast a ballot next week in the Senate race that will determine his political future. The Department of Law decision about Stevens' right to vote depended on two factors: when a person is considered convicted and whether the crime is one of moral turpitude. According to state law, that's defined as crimes that are immoral and wrong. It includes crimes of dishonesty, such as schemes to defraud or falsify business records, a senior assistant attorney general with the state, Michael Barnhill, said in an opinion that Stevens' guilty verdict of concealing a scheme and making false statements would bar him from voting based on the morality guidelines. So once he is sentenced, the soon-to-be 85-year-old won't be able to vote in the state he helped found. A sentencing date will likely be set on September 25th, when federal judge Emmett Sullivan will hold a hearing to review any motions filed by then. Stevens' lawyers have until early December to request a new trial or make any other motions. The Department of Law finding notes that since this is a high-profile situation, the decision that Stevens can vote next week may be legally challenged. If that happens, the state will provide Stevens with a question ballot. It took the Department of Law 2 days to come to its conclusion, which was sent to the Division of Elections. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The investigation into the sinking of the fishing vessel Katmai in the Bering Sea is moving to Seattle following a hearing this week in Anchorage. Coast Guard Lieutenant Eric Egan in Anchorage says the Marine Board of Investigation is reconvening in Seattle on Friday to look at a vessel similar to the Katmai to better understand its structural design and layout. Coast Guard Petty Officer in Seattle Jeff Pollinger says the hearing would resume Monday in Seattle. The Katmai went down October 22nd. 7 of the 11 crewmen were lost. It was disclosed at Wednesday's hearing that a Mayday call was recorded but not heard at the Hodiak Coast Guard Station more than an hour and a half before the emergency radio transmission was received at the rescue center in Juneau. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, looking at the economic impacts of one Native corporation on its region.
We've made a very strong commitment over the years to southeastern Alaska communities, and we hope to be able to continue that.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
There's a new call for additional protection of Denali National Park wolves that stray outside the park boundary. Wildlife scientist Gordon Haber and University of Alaska professor Rick Steiner have teamed up on a letter sent to the state's Fish and Game Commissioner requesting emergency expansion of an existing protective buffer zone on state land north and east of the park. KYC's Dan Bross reports.
Gordon Haber is no stranger to Denali wolf politics. Haber's been studying Denali wolves for 43 years, logging thousands of hours observing their behavior as an independent researcher, but also advocating for their protection. He's long petitioned for an expanded buffer zone to protect wolves that move outside the park, where they can be legally hunted and trapped. Haber says he's pushing the issue again due to heavy losses last winter in the area between the Savage and Nenana rivers.
Wolves come from near and far areas of the park and go there quite deliberately to hunt. And trappers lie in wait for them there and nail them.
Haber says as many as 19 park wolves were taken in the 100-square-mile area he wants off limits to wolf hunting and trapping. Haber says wolves repopulate quickly and park wolf numbers are not declining, but that hunting and trapping pressure is deterring wolves from frequenting popular wildlife viewing areas inside the park.
This has happened in the Toklat East Fork group from losses that occurred in that same area in 2005. They changed their patterns of movement such that people are seeing them nowhere near as much along road areas as they used to.
Haber says wolf behavior is also being altered in ways less visible to the public. University of Alaska Marine Conservation Professor Rick Steiner co-wrote the letter to the state requesting expanded Denali wolf protection. A familiar voice on coastal environmental issues, Steiner says he joined Haber on the letter because of the importance of Denali wolves.
They have a lot of economic and tourist value, but also they're important to the ecosystem of the park. So the whole issue of responsible management of wildlife in Alaska comes to rest in various different corners of the state and in state policy, and this is a very clear one.
Steiner cites the hundreds of thousands of tourists who come to see park wildlife, including wolves, every year. Denali National Park spokeswoman Chris Pfister says there was no decline in wolf viewing opportunities along the park road this past summer.
We know that right now there are over 40 wolves in the four packs that were commonly seen along the park road corridor. So at least at the time being, we know that there don't appear to be any decreased number of sightings for folks. Wildlife viewing opportunities, including wolf viewing opportunities, were pretty good.
Pfister says the Park Service is not opposed to increasing the size of the protective buffer zone on state land outside the park, but that the agency is not pushing for it.
We don't have the biological justification to do any lobbying for it because at this point in time, the park's wildlife population, including its wolf population, is strong.
The State Board of Game is in the midst of a self-mandated moratorium on dealing with Denali wolf issues, which for several years took up a lot of time at its meetings. Fish and Game spokeswoman Kathy Harms says emergency action to expand the buffer zone would only be taken if the area wolf population was in danger of declining.
The future of the population would have to be of concern. There would have to be a biological concern. And it's very difficult to manage for individual animals.
Haber and Steiner want the state to ban hunting and trapping of wolves and coyotes in the expanded area on the park's northeastern edge. Haber says coyotes are included because they can be mistaken for wolves, and there's evidence that wolves are being caught in snares intended for coyotes. Wolf hunting and trapping season opens Saturday on state land outside the park. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Financial Times reports that output from the world's oil fields is declining faster than previously thought. The British newspaper obtained a draft of the International Energy Agency's annual report. According to the Times, the draft World Energy Outlook says world oil output will decline 9% per year without significant investment to raise production. The findings suggest the world will struggle to make up for steep declines in existing oil fields like those in the North Sea, Russia, and Alaska. The International Energy Agency said the figures cited by the newspaper could be misleading since they came from an early draft that has been since revised. The final version will be released in 2 weeks. Last year's World Energy Outlook warned of an oil crunch by the year 2013. A British oil industry task force did officially release a report yesterday saying the age of easy oil has already ended. The report expresses concern that despite record oil prices and profits in recent years, the world's oil companies are not discovering more giant oil fields. The report by the UK Industry Task Force on Peak Oil and Energy Security includes two conflicting forecasts. They say global oil supply will either hit a plateau in 7 years or else it will peak and begin a long decline in the next 3 to 5 years. The task force says oil supplies are more likely to decline than plateau. The report says a peak in oil production would hit every sector of the global economy. It urges all governments to create national plans for dealing with peak oil and to cooperate on the twin problems of oil depletion and greenhouse gas emissions. Two Haines men are wrapping up their campaigns for the District 5 House seat. The district includes about 25 Southeast and Prince William Sound communities and stretches from Metlakatla to Skagway to Cordova. Incumbent Republican Representative Bill Thomas, a fisherman and former lobbyist, is running for re-election. He's being challenged by Democrat Tim June, a fisherman and boat builder. From KHNS in Haines, John Hunt has the details.
Thomas is running for his third term in office. He talked about the changes he's seen while in the House and mentioned Senator Kukesh as an ally in the Senate.
We've spent a lot of time and money rebuilding, fixing infrastructure. We're not creating as many jobs as we like. We've suffered some vetoes through the years, but you know, I have the fishing game budget and work with DOT very closely on projects. And I think that the infrastructure and rebuilding of the district's been going along quite well. And with Albert in the Senate majority, we get things done.
Thomas credited the recent hike in oil revenues as what most likely helped Governor Palin approve funding for the state ferry system this year. And he said he is continuing to support the Marine Transportation Advisory Board on funding efforts for replacement of the aging fleet.
I think that that's one of the major ones in keeping all the Marine Highway in place. That is our highway. And so we have to fight for it every year. And actually last year, the governor had no problems and put the money in there. So it was a lot less fight than we were expecting. So that's good. And, that is the very key to Southeast here.
Thomas has control of the budget for the Department of Fish and Game. He said he was asked this summer, as he is asked in most years, why monitoring of certain waterways is underfunded or not funded at all.
So I said, why don't you tell me? I said, I have the budget we can put. If it's $50,000 or $100,000 more, that's economic development. We can keep fishing game, monitoring it on top of the escapement goals and make sure that they're maximized, but you also maximize the harvest.
Small logging operators in Southeast have been asking for easier access to state-owned timberlands. Thomas responded to the question of access to roadless lands.
Well, I've never heard the complaints. If they should let me know so we can go forward and look at it. But I do know that we may run into people who object to any more roads being developed, period. And I hear that in some areas. We already got too many roads. We don't need to access more timber. But all of a sudden, if the timber is for small mills versus, back in the old days, a big pulp mill or a big sawmill, it's different. It's all about funding and creating jobs.
Democrat Tim June is running against Republican Bill Thomas for the State House in District 5. June thinks the legislature needs to reassess some of its recent decisions regarding the state's education funding.
We have to consider in Alaska to eliminate the Tier 4 system that was created last year, which took away a defined benefit from teachers and replace it with a defined 401k contribution.
June says Tier 4 has effectively reduced the reasons for good teachers to come to or to stay in the state.
I've talked to educators. I've talked to Alaska School Board Association. Everybody keeps telling me that they go to job fairs and there are no longer people that want to come to Alaska to teach. It's like, why should they? We're not offering a competitive retirement system. We're not offering competitive salaries. And if we want quality education in Alaska, we have to pony up and pay the money to be competitive with other states.
June suggested the state should take on the rising costs of maintaining and heating school buildings.
We're still always caught with the dilemma that it's costing us so much money to maintain the building and the energy costs for the building, and that money is coming away from the classrooms. And so I think we have to keep the message out there that the building be separate from education. My idea is the state should pick up the increased cost of rural Alaska schools of maintaining the building itself and then equally fund schools per student across the board.
June says the age and condition of many of the schools in the state is causing a growing burden for local communities. June thinks the state's newfound oil wealth should equate to increased funding for schools, which in turn would help relieve local taxes.
For instance, if we have an inefficient building, that means our property taxes have to go up to help pay for that building. It's in the state's interest to build new buildings, to build efficient buildings, and in a sense help that out.
Democrat Tim June is running against Republican Bill Thomas for the State House in District 5. June lost to Thomas by 59 votes in 2004. Thanks to KRBD's Jay Marble. In Haines, I'm John Hunt.
Alaska State Troopers have identified several suspects in the prison death of convicted murderer John Carlin. 51-year-old Carlin died under suspicious circumstances Monday night at the Spring Creek Correctional Center in Seward. Carlin was serving time for conspiring with Michelle Linehan to murder Linehan's fiancé, Kent LePink, in 1996. State troopers released a statement today saying an autopsy revealed that Carlin died from blunt force trauma. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation has identified suspects in the case. The investigation is ongoing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the new AT&T, your world delivered. APRN would like to thank the Alaska Railroad Corporation for sponsoring Alaska Morning News and Alaska News Nightly. To learn more about this sponsorship, call 907-550-8439.
Agriculture is the issue in the Matanuska Valley's House District 16, where cow pastures intersect with suburban housing developments. Democrat Beverly Serrano is challenging three-term incumbent Republican Bill Stoltz for the legislative seat. APRN's Ellen Lockyer reports.
first-time candidate, Beverly Serrano, describes herself as a Wasilla stay-at-home mom.
My very first time running for anything ever.
She has sold real estate and has worked for the city of Anchorage. Now she has a share in her husband's bottled water business. But Serrano has definite ideas on some changes that need to be made in the Matanuska Valley, especially when it comes to education.
We are ranked fifth from the bottom in quality of education among all the states in the United States. This is something that I will not accept as a status quo situation. We used to be 25 back in 2002, which is in the middle, but now we're at the bottom, and I know that the classrooms need to see more support.
Serrano says she's tired of partisan politics, that legislators need to work closely together for the good of the state. She says there is a state budget crisis looming.
We have to look at allocating funds in forward funding. We have to do forward funding with the surplus that we have right now to outline what our priorities are and where we want to place our money into forward funding or even how we're going to regain some revenue. I see a real good future for a gas pipeline, and I've always supported the All-Alaska Gas Pipeline. There are outside markets that would pay twice as much as the lower 48 would for our gas.
Alternative energy and boosting state agriculture also top her list of concerns. Serrano says she'll work to get more money for local projects.
I do believe that municipal revenue sharing needs to be continued and even increased because it's the local governments that know the needs best.
Representative Bill Stultz has held his seat in the State House for 6 years. Stultz says his rambling district contains a blend of farming and suburban lifestyles, although the downturn in the economy is worrying everyone.
There's a lot of uncertainty. I think people are being a lot more cautious, and they're holding off on long-term decisions, and they're just a lot more frugality.
He says the state administration is not doing enough to encourage the Valley's local agricultural producers to stay in business.
I think our state could be a lot more proactive on looking at our successes and how can we make the next leap on perpetuating the successes in ag that we do have, you know, our success in potatoes and carrots, and figuring out a way to get those in the market. And we have a lot of good farmers who know how to make a living. And I think the state is appropriate to lend marketing assistance and helping them get to the next step of increasing their market.
Stultz says dwindling state revenues will challenge the next legislature.
Well, it looks like we're going to have much less significant surplus, if any. It's a good thing we put a lot of money into the constitutional budget and statutory budget reserve accounts, I think. In spite of a lot of the overspending, there was a lot of savings as well.
Stultz serves on the Legislative Council and on the House Finance Committee.
With Senator Green leaving her position of influence, I hope to help fill the vacuum of expertise and on finance issues for meeting Valley priorities. So I have been the member of the Valley that served on finance, so that's been an area-wide responsibility, not just for District 16, but for the entire Mat Valley.
Stultz says two social concerns top his list, a victims' rights program, which he is working for, and a program to help the developmentally disabled.
One of my passions is making sure that people with challenges and disabilities aren't ignored.
He says all Alaskans deserve to live with dignity. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A recent study says regional native corporation Sea Alaska is the largest employer on Prince of Wales Island. It's also a significant economic player in other parts of Southeast, but that role is shrinking as the corporation's timber supply declines. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Sea Alaska spends about $40 million a year in Southeast Alaska, employing about 420 people. That's according to an economic report based on the year 2007 prepared by the McDowell Group, a Juneau-based research company. About half the spending and more than half the jobs are on Prince of Wales Island. That includes direct employees and contractors in logging and shiploading operations. The report says that makes Sea Alaska the largest creator of jobs on the island. Chris McNeil is president and CEO of Sea Alaska.
You know, all of this may
makes a very big impact in areas where there are not a whole bunch of other enterprises that are operating. And, you know, we've made a very strong commitment over the years to southeastern Alaska communities, and we hope to be able to continue that.
Sea Alaska owns plastics and metals fabrication plants, an environmental cleanup firm, and a prototype development company. But those are in the lower 48. McNeil says most of the corporation's southeast business comes from logging its land. Much of that timber has been cut, and it's too early to go after the next generation of trees.
We, 2 years ago, had dropped our timber harvest from 100 million board feet to 50 million board feet to recognize the amount of our estimated remaining merchantable timber. We could see the decline there after we had completed a large-scale assessment of our remaining timber. We've got a fair amount of standing timber, but the merchantable timber is quite a bit less.
Most of Sea Alaska's logs are sold to Asia in the round. It plans to continue that strategy as long as it brings the best price, but McNeil says the corporation is looking harder at buyers closer to home.
We sell trees not only into overseas markets in the Far East, but also we have sold domestically. We sold pulp. We sold to the Pacific Northwest market, principally with our cedar. So basically, our obligation is to sell where the markets lie.
Southeast's pulp mills, which closed in the 90s, bought some Sea Alaska timber, and the region's remaining sawmills sometimes purchase the corporation's logs. Alaska Forest Association Executive Director Owen Graham says the mills would like to buy more Sea Alaska wood. That's because they've been able to get far less than they need from the Forest Service, but he says they can't afford the price.
Right now, our timber supply in the region is so small that we have very little economy of scale, and it's hard for us to be competitive with other markets. And so Sea Alaska, you know, is doing the best they can by their shareholders, going to where they get the most value for their timber.
Sea Alaska expects to run out of trees worth cutting in about 5 years. It's asked Alaska's congressional delegation for legislation allowing it to select more Prince of Wales timberlands, and two measures have been introduced. But their chances in Congress are uncertain. Former Wrangell and Juneau newspaper editor Larry Pursley, who also worked for the governor's Washington, D.C. office, says opposition comes from both sides of the aisle.
You're going to have environmental groups and others fighting this, saying that, hey, there's already been enough logging on a large scale in the Tongass. We don't need more logging. You're going to have other people saying Congress and the federal government has done enough for Native corporations with the no-bid 8A contracts, with the tax savings that were granted to them, or they could sell net operating losses. It's just going to be tough to get through.
Sea Alaska's $40 million in annual spending includes its corporate headquarters and its cultural arm, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld and John Ryan in Juneau, and John Hunt in Haines. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business, and by the Alaska Power Association, representing the interests of 600,000 electric consumers and the utilities that serve them. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.